Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the Court. I'm Jonathan Sternberg, and I represent the appellant and cross-respondent, Carl Greer. We have 1 point on appeal, and the employer has 3 points on cross-appeal. But I'd like to begin with the employer's first point on cross-appeal. I know it's a little unusual because I'm standing up here doing the appellant's argument, but it's why the Eastern District transferred the case to this Court and why the Chamber of Commerce filed an amicus brief. In Section 287.170 of the revised statutes, the workers' compensation law provides that temporary total disability benefits, quote, shall be paid throughout the rehabilitative process. While older decisions, beginning with the Vinson case in the Court of Appeals in 1991, held a reasonable interpretation of this was that the benefits must stop at the point of the employee's so-called maximum medical improvement, in 2005, the General Assembly amended the workers' compensation law to require, in Section 287.800, that all its provisions be strictly construed. The temporary and total disability statute, 287.170, does not mention any requirement that benefits stop at maximum medical improvement. Instead, it requires that they continue throughout the rehabilitative process.
What is the difference as a practical matter in when you've reached maximum medical improvement and the rehabilitative process? And what instances are you suggesting the rehabilitative process would continue beyond maximum medical improvement?
That's an excellent question, Judge. In this case, the Commission answered that pretty well, and it's pretty emphatic language. The Commission, of course, deals with these cases on a day-in, day-out basis. They say that in a case where the employee's condition does not appreciably improve or even worsens, such as this one, despite further surgeries, applying a per se rule that temporary total disability benefits cannot be awarded after the date of maximum medical improvement, that is, when he stops improving, not when the rehabilitative process is over, works an absurd result. It's especially true here where the rule would require us to ignore the uncontested expert assessment.
So are you basically arguing that you can't know until after the fact whether you're going to keep getting better or not? You'll try treatments and at some point they quit working and you can't retroactively look back and decide when he got as well as he was going to get?
As a matter of fact, yes. I mean, it's a question of fact. And in this case, Dr. Johnson, Mr. Greer's Washington University surgeon, testified that when Mr. Greer was released from his care in February 2011, only then did his rehabilitative process end. And it's not a question of, you know, did he get better after the surgery or not. It was what care was required. He remained under the doctor's care. And the commission, it's pages 58 to 59 of the legal file, goes into great detail about this. Nothing in Chapter 287 would preclude, which is what the other side's arguing, that it precludes an award of temporary total disability benefits covering a healing period. I mean, that's what we're really talking about, is the healing period, not maximum medical improvement. Did the surgery make him better? Something like that. Because in this case, Mr. Greer is, to this day, as the record plainly shows, in a pretty bad state. You know, strict construction it's kind of like Justice Hugo Black's old-fashioned formulation about the First Amendment. When the Constitution says Congress shall make no law, abridging the freedom of speech, no law means no law. Here, the rehabilitative process is not the same thing as maximum medical improvement, as the Commission itself saw. So strictly construed, the point in this case, unlike the Caldwell case that the other side cites in 2008, which is just dicta, but unlike there, strictly construed, 287.170 plainly permits temporary total disability benefits through February 2011, through the date that the rehabilitative process ended. It's interesting that in the Vinson case, where this language originated, I searched and tried to see, you know, did it come up anywhere before 1991? And apparently, in Vinson, the commission thought up this language, you know, maximum medical improvement. And under the pre-Hampton Big Boy Steel standard of review, the Court of Appeals reviewing that decision said that this interpretation is reasonable and, quote, thus we have no permissible grounds for substituting another interpretation for it. Well, since then, as the Court knows well, the standard of review has radically changed on agency cases. Now there's a review of the whole record without regard to looking at it in the light most favorable to the judgment, with de novo review of the law. Well, under de novo review, the question here, unlike in the Caldwell case, unlike in the Vinson case, is can the commission not continue these benefits until the date the rehabilitative process has ended? Must they arbitrarily use this date of maximum medical improvement? And plainly, if the court were to hold in their favor on that, it would vitiate the purposes of 287.800. No law means no law. Rehabilitative process does not mean maximum medical improvement. Now, if the court will...
Counsel, the language you're using throughout the rehabilitative process, that's not in subsection 170. That's in 149, correct?
You know what, Judge? I apologize. You are correct. It is in 149. Forgive me. That's the temporary total disability statute. You're right. It's 287.149.1. Temporary total disability benefits shall be paid throughout the rehabilitative process. I apologize for misciting the statute. But regardless, that's what the commission said as well. They were using, I suppose, they were citing the wrong statute as well. So this court has de novo review of their decision, and if they were citing the
wrong
statute.
So how are you saying that the commission and the court should determine what is the end of the rehabilitative process so that a permanent award at some point, it has to be time to make that permanent award and end the temporary, partial, or total disability?
Absolutely, Judge. The question is when the end of the healing period is, which is what the commission used as the... I'm not even sure a black line test. I think that's what you're asking, Judge. You know, what?
I'm asking if you're saying it's not maximum medical improvement. At some point, determination has to be made. How do you propose it be made?
It should be made
under the statute?
Certainly. It's a factual determination. And here, the commission on page 58 of the legal file said the question, that the award of temporary total disability benefits must cover the employee's healing period. And that's a question of fact. What do the experts say? When do they say his healing period end? And they go into great detail in a very lengthy paragraph because of Dr. Johnson's testimony regarding what happened following the June 2010 surgery, he wasn't released from Dr. Johnson's care until February 2011. When these primary treatments ended, that's when the rehabilitative process ended. And that's not an unreasonable determination. Now, seeing I have 4 minutes left of my opening, I'd like to turn to our argument on appeal as well. We've been talking about...
This was eventually a permanent partial disability case.
That's what the ALJ and the commission said, yes, that it became permanent partial disability. We're actually arguing in our opening, in our point on appeal, that in fact Mr. Greer was permanently and totally disabled. Again, under the now 10-year-old standard of review that the court uses, there isn't a review of the record in the light most favorable to the commission's decision. Instead, there's a review of the entire record. Of course, the court cannot question credibility determinations and that kind of thing. The test for permanent and total disability is whether in the ordinary course of business any employer reasonably would be expected to hire the claimant in his present physical condition. In this case, the overwhelming weight of the substantial and competent evidence was that Mr. Greer would not be hired in his present physical condition.
You're asking us to substitute our view of the credibility of the witnesses, because there were experts on both sides, and I know you point out the employer's expert didn't actually examine or talk personally to the injured party, but in figuring out what vocational options were available to them. But is there any case that says that makes it not belief worthy?
It's not a question of belief, Judge. We have to take as true that this expert, Terry Cordray, who is the second injury funds expert, was telling the truth. I mean, that he actually did believe this, and there's nothing wrong with that. The question is, was it substantial and competent evidence? And in this case, it was insubstantial and incompetent. That's a question of law. Which this court can review de novo. It's a review of the entire record. Here, this expert, you're right, he never met with Mr. Greer. He did not determine, crucially, did not determine Mr. Greer's ability to compete with other applicants. And he admitted that on the stand. And he admitted in the ordinary course of what he does to do a proper evaluation, he would have preferred to meet with Mr. Greer. On the other hand, we have an expert who no one said was not credible either. Both of the
experts. What about the concept that the trier of fact can believe all part or none of the evidence from any witness?
And again, we're not questioning this person's credibility.
But you had the burden of proof. They just didn't. They didn't think they were lying. They just didn't believe him.
He plumb didn't believe our expert, is what I'm saying, Judge.
Isn't that a possibility on this
record? It's not in his decision. If anything, he outlined, the ALJ in his decision outlined both of the experts' testimony. He never said, I disbelieve that one. I mean, one would expect something in there.
What about the fact he didn't find in accordance with your expert? Is that some indication that he didn't believe him? Maybe that, not that he thought he was lying, but that he just didn't believe him?
Again, that's not in the record.
Well, you said we can't make
I'm saying the record is his decision. His decision was I didn't believe him, so I didn't find him permanently totally disabled.
I understand exactly what you're saying, Judge. I just don't think that happened.
Is the answer to that question affected by the fact that here, unlike in cases tried in court, we don't assume all inferences in favor of the result. We just look at what was said.
That's correct. The question is, what does substantial incompetent evidence show? What is the weight of the substantial incompetent evidence show? And here, the weight of that is our expert, who did meet with Mr. Greer, who did test him at length in person, he determined Mr. Greer was permanently and totally disabled. I would direct the court to his testimony, pages 733 to 759 of the transcript. Moreover, just the mere facts of what Mr. Greer's current state is, which the ALJ certainly did accept as true, show that there's no way that an employer in the regular course of business in his current permanent state, current physical state, would employ him.
Is there a difference in the rate that somebody's paid for temporary total disability and permanent total disability?
There is. Here, there was a stipulated rate, Judge. I don't have the exact stipulated rate in front of me, but for 40 hours of a permanent partial disability, it was $14,000, so that's what the award is. So the rate can be determined by that.
Is there a requirement that the written findings include credibility determinations?
No, of course not, Judge. Of course not.
Counsel, it seems like the questions in this case were exacerbated by the fact that it took more than 6 years to get this claim heard.
I wouldn't disagree.
You would agree that temporary disability payments don't extend past the award.
No, they...
And the issue of future medical is drawn when the award is made. Why did it take 6.5 years to get this claim heard?
Judge, that's not in the record, and I frankly don't know.
I mean, how long can you wait to pile up what you would then argue are temporary disability payments before you bring the claim to hearing?
I absolutely understand your concern, Judge. Unfortunately, I simply don't know the answer to that.
Is an award usually made during the healing process? Does the Commission have a policy of waiting, or is this just happenstance that it took a long time in this case?
I actually do not know the circumstances under
which
it took.
Well, we can ask opposing counsel.
I'm sure you
questions.
Can, and I'm sure I'll have an answer on rebuttal. Thank you, Judge.
Thank you.
May it please the Court. I was introduced earlier. My name is John Allen. I represent the respondent and cross-appellant on appeal, Sysco Food Services. As counsel pointed out, we did raise three issues on appeal. I, like counsel, want to focus on the issue of temporary total disability because that undoubtedly is the reason why the Court of Appeals transferred this case to this court. There's no dispute that the phrase maximum medical improvement does not appear in the workers' compensation law. But the absence of that phrase from the statute does not require this case, this court, to overturn the years and years of precedent, setting forth different standards with respect to when temporary disability ends and permanent disability begins. We're talking about strict construction. This court recently, in the Templemeyer case, told us what that means. The court held a strict construction of a statute presumes nothing that is not expressed. The operation of the statute must be confined to matters affirmatively pointed out by its terms and to cases which fall fairly within its letter.
Do strict and liberal construction require any different result if the statute is unambiguous? By its terms, you have to construe it the same, whatever kind of construction you put on it, don't you?
You're right, Your Honor.
So don't we just look at the language of the statute? And I understand these earlier cases said maximum medical improvement is a reasonable, they seem to think it's a reasonable interpretation of what the statute means, but why don't we just look at the statutory words instead of fighting over what's meant by what some court said?
I'd love to do that,
Your
Honor.
So tell me what the statute says and what it means and how you think the statutory language applies here.
I'd love to do that. So we start with what is temporary total disability? 287.170.1 provides for temporary total disability benefits as follows. It says, for temporary total disability, the employer shall pay compensation for not more than 400 weeks during the continuance of such disability at the weekly rate of compensation in effect under the section at the time of the injury. The legislature did not define the word temporary, so we have to look to the plain meaning of that word. We can look to the dictionary. The New Oxford American Dictionary defines temporary as lasting for only a limited period of time, not permanent. You go on dictionary.com, you'll find this definition: lasting, existing, serving, or effective for a time only, not permanent. My dictionary that I like to use, I got as a gift for my 11th birthday. It's the New World Dictionary, or the Webster's World Dictionary. I took a look at that one, and it says lasting, enjoyed, used, etc., for a time only, not permanent. So the plain language of the word temporary is something that is not permanent. The legislature did define total disability in 287.020.6 as the inability to return to any employment and not merely the inability to return to the employment in which the employee was engaged at the time of the accident. So the plain meaning of temporary total disability then is the limited, not permanent, period of time when an injured worker is unable to return to any employment. So now let's talk about what the statute provides with respect to the benefits an injured worker is entitled to when he suffers from temporary total disability. We find that in 287.149.1. As Judge Wilson pointed out, that's 149, it's not in 170. It says temporary total disability or temporary partial disability benefits shall be paid throughout the rehabilitative process. It is interesting to note that 149.149 is in a section that talks about rehabilitative services. Nonetheless, we have to deal with the law it's written, and it does say that those benefits are to be paid throughout the rehabilitative process.
So why isn't that the term we're trying to interpret what that means? And I understand the case has tried to, but opposing counsel says, even though normally those are probably going to end at the same point, here he was still in the process of getting better. My concern about your argument, and I'd like your answer to it, is how do you know what's maximum medical improvement except by looking back and saying you quit getting better? And wouldn't that mean you don't know if some surgery or other treatment's paid for until after it's already done?
Well, I think what's important, Your Honor, is that first you have to prove, and it is the injured worker's burden to prove, that he has a temporary total disability. And as I said, the plain language of the meaning temporary is something that is not permanent. Mm-hmm. The legislature clearly contemplated a time at which a temporary benefit ceases to be temporary and becomes permanent.
And how did they guide us in figuring out what that time is?
The legislature did not guide us in that regard, Judge, which is why...
Well, didn't they say rehabilitative process?
Well, the rehabilitative process is not defined. And the rehabilitative process is only with respect to the duration when temporary total disability benefits are paid. That sheds no light as to whether or not somebody is suffering from a temporary disability. So we have to look to the...
I'm sorry, I'm not understanding... But I want to understand your argument. If they're still in the rehabilitative process, isn't that under the statute part of the temporary disability? Or is there some otherwise, I'm not quite understanding why that would be part of the...
Well, let's look at the facts of this case, Your Honor. The commission did held that the evidence was overwhelming that Mr. Greer was at maximum medical improvement.
Okay.
The evidence was overwhelming in that regard. He was awarded permanent partial disability for his disability that for which the accident work was a prevailing factor.
What if the 2010 surgery had been helpful? instead of unhelpful.
Well, those aren't the facts before us.
But how do you know until afterwards? That's what I'm saying. How do you decide something retrospectively?
That will be left to the ALJ and the courts, because it is undoubtedly a question of fact. And that's why when we go back and we look at these litany of cases, we don't just find maximum medical improvement. As counsel pointed out, we see words like healing period, the point of maximum medical progress. All of these terms the courts have used to define that point in time, and there is no doubt from the plainly language of the statute that there is a point in time at which a disability ceases to become temporary and become permanent. We know that. Otherwise, the legislature would not have had, you know, a separate section for temporary total disability benefits and a section for permanent partial disability benefits. Permanent partial disability benefits are defined to be permanent or disability that is permanent in nature and partial in degree.
Is that affected in any way by when the commission enters the award? I mean, as Judge Wilson pointed out, there was this 6-year gap. Was it because they thought there were still ongoing problems and they were waiting until they got to the final point, or was there just simply logistical issues, or should that impact what's temporary and then after the award the other things are permanent?
Well, so from a practical perspective, what happens, and I can tell you what happened in this case, we went to a hearing. There was not an agreement with respect to the causation first, and then with respect to whether or not he needed any further treatment. So we had to go to a hearing. We went before Judge Koehner, the ALJ, and we presented our evidence. Evidence that included all of the deposition transcripts from the doctors and that sort of thing. And at that point in time, before Mr. Greer had gone for his surgery, and a decision was entered, Judge Koehner found, based on the facts, not that he was at maximum medical improvement, that he was at the point of maximum medical progress. Judge Koehner relied on the Pruitt case. And he said it was his determination.
And when did he make that determination?
That was at the hearing. That was following the hearing.
What year?
That would have been in 2000. I'd have to go back and look at the record, Your Honor. So now it's been around for so long, I don't
before,
even know.
Before or after the 2010 surgery?
Oh, before the surgery,
okay.
Your Honor.
So the surgery would, so the court made the award before the surgery?
Yes, Your Honor. Okay. And there was an award for, as I said, permanent partial disability.
Okay.
And again, as I said, the legislature has defined that to be the disability that's permanent in nature, partial in degree. And it's interesting to note the commission says it's not fair, it leads to an absurd result. Well, that's not true. I mean, that's precisely why an injured worker is awarded permanent disability benefits, to provide an award for the permanent disability. The practical problem, if we don't have some standard, if the courts are not left with some discretion to decide when a temporary benefit becomes permanent, is that, as Judge Wilson pointed out, we could be out 6 years and the claim be made that the injured worker is entitled to temporary total disability benefits. There's a distinction, and an important distinction, to be made between disability benefits and the provision of medical aid. There is that distinction.
Again, it is fair. Really, what this case is really about is a start date.
Well, end date, start date.
Well, we know the end dates, because if it's permanent total disability, there is no end date. If it's permanent partial disability, it's a number of weeks, and that has an end date. So the issue is, from the money perspective, what's the start date?
Well, the award here, Judge, was for permanent partial disability,
which is a number of weeks.
Which is a number of weeks, correct.
So the issue is when, we know what the end date is, because it's a set number. So the issue is, where in the process would the start date be? Is it maximum medical improvement, or does the statute suggest another definition?
And here's what's interesting. The commission must have accepted the date of maximum medical improvement as a start date, because the commission did not overturn the ALJ on the permanent partial disability award.
But the award's going to be the same regardless. It's X number of weeks.
It's a certain number of weeks.
What weeks were included? And does the award say, I'm looking at it, which weeks they found he was entitled for?
I think it was 25%. I'd have to go back and look at the record to find out exactly what the award was.
Well, the award was not given until March of 2014. That's long after the surgeries in question.
27.5% of the body as a whole was the award for permanent partial disability.
But in effect, what you're saying is there may be a lengthy period of years in which the employee needs medical treatment between the time you're saying the temporary partial disability was owed that person and the final award, where they're not getting their medicals, and they would have to fund whatever medical treatment they need out of money that you're saying they're not entitled to, because even though they haven't yet gotten their award for permanent disability, but you're saying they're not temporarily disabled either, even if they're still healing.
No, so the record act, or the statute rather, actually provides for medical payments, right? And it's not the prevailing factor that we have for disabilities. It is, and it has come to be, basically that medical treatment which flows from the work accident.
And right? I apologize, my questions have been taking your co-counsel's time. I apologize.
We're at 3 minutes, but I'd be happy to yield at this point. Thank you, Your Honor.
Tell me something. I got a question about the timing. And the statute, it talks about 400 weeks, right?
Yes, sir.
And the my math is not that good, but that's approximately 7 years worth of possible payments, correct?
That's exactly right, Your Honor.
Thank you.
For total, and that would be for the total injury to the body as a whole, for a total disability. Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the court. I'm only going to address the issue of permanent total disability here. Essentially, there are two fatal flaws with the appellant's argument that he's permanently and totally disabled. One of those has to do with the commission's credibility determinations. This court is actually required to defer to the commission's credibility determinations. And the commission expressly found in their award regarding the vocational expert, Mr. Dolan, that his opinions are against the great weight of credible evidence and the objective medical evidence here. Also, regarding Mr. Greer's testimony at hearing and his subjective complaints, they specifically found in the award that his subjective complaints should be viewed as suspect, reflecting poorly on Greer's credibility. Therefore, this commission appropriately gave more weight to the opinions of Mr. Cordray, the other vocational expert in this case. And this court must defer to the commission as to those credibility determinations and as to whether the commission gave more weight to one expert over another. I know appellant argues that Mr. Dolan, their vocational expert, actually saw Mr. Greer and met with him, and that should be a reason that Mr. Cordray should not be found credible. However, Mr. Dolan, as it's shown in the award, his opinions are based on Mr. Greer's subjective complaints. They're based on the fact that he has to elevate his leg throughout the day, and the commission found that those subjective complaints are not credible. Therefore, it's not appropriate to rely on Mr. Dolan's opinions. Also, Mr. Cordray did get to evaluate the testing that Mr. Dolan did. So he saw all the testing, and he did find that Mr. Greer is not only employable, but he's placeable in the open labor market. And so that brings me to my second point as to the standard of review. The standard of review is whether there's substantial and competent evidence to support the award that Mr. Greer is not permanently and totally disabled. And Mr. Cordray's testimony is that substantial and competent evidence. So the standard of review is not whether there was overwhelming evidence to find that the claimant is permanently and totally disabled, as appellant asserted. And here, because of Mr. Cordray's testimony that the claimant is not only employable but placeable in the open labor market, there's clear, substantial, and competent evidence to support that Mr. Greer is not permanently and totally disabled. If there are any questions, I'll be happy to answer them. Otherwise, we would just ask that you affirm the award of the commission in this case.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Counsel, do you agree that that there was a hearing and a finding before the 2010 surgery?
No, I do not agree with that. The hearing and the finding were, as the record shows, July 5th, 2013, which was after the surgery. I want to start out, though, by answering your previous question, Judge Wilson, why this took so long. In this case, the employer denied treatment. It ended the treatment. It refused to pay for the treatment at a point, and Mr. Greer had to treat on his own, which is what the past medical, has to compensate him for. The doctor that the employer had used as an expert said that he had reached maximum medical improvement in April of 2007. Obviously, the ALJ and the commission disagreed with that, too. The ALJ had found all the treatment was valid and awarded him past medical, so the employer can't be rewarded for maximum medical improvement and denying benefits that the court said was valid in the first place. But why it took so long was Mr. Greer was self-treating, and it took a while to get the case together. And that's really what it comes to. And my understanding, I don't handle workers' comp cases usually, but my understanding is this is not atypical in a workers' comp case. The other side, and I think the court went around with them about this, said that treatment has to end at some point. I agree, without question. And they say that point is maximum medical improvement, even if the rehabilitative process is continued. Certainly, temporary total disability is a limited, not permanent period in which he's recovering. That's the exact quote from opposing counsel. I agree entirely. The problem is he doesn't identify what exactly that means as to the end point. I'm not sure it's a question of the start point, it's an end point. And the 400 weeks, Judge Draper, is as a temporary total disability, not in a permanent total, can go on for far longer, and that's a different kind of award. The question is, when is the start date of the permanent partial disability in this case? The ALJ, you're correct, Judge, does not identify that. That is not in there, doesn't say when that date is. But clearly, it's at the end of whenever the temporary total disability ends. And there's nothing wrong, based on the evidence in this case, with holding that he was still under the rehabilitative process until he was released from his doctor's care.
And that was in 2011.
That was February of 2011. At which point the permanent partial disability of 40 point some odd weeks would begin.
He had been released by other doctors earlier, though, right?
He had gone from doctor to doctor. Actually, he had been referred by those previous, he had been released technically by those doctors, but kept being referred to others, eventually wound up at Washington University Hospital with Dr. Johnson, who did attempt a surgery that unfortunately didn't do a whole lot, and in fact made his case even worse, but he was still recovering from that surgery. The rehabilitative process still continued until February of 2011. Seeing that I'm out of time, I'd ask the court to affirm the that portion and reverse and grant this permanent total disability.
Thank you. Thank you, counsel, for your argument. The case will be submitted.